This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
This show may contain strong language or adult themes. Listener discretion is advised. There is nothing wrong with your radio. We are controlling transmission. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limit frequency.
Good evening, my name's Ricardo.
My name is Sam.
And this is the Outer Limit Frequency. It should go without saying that a movie soundtrack is one of the most important aspects of the overall presentation. If you're a pedant about it and feel like disagreeing with this point, I would like to remind you that soundtracks were standard fare long before spoken dialogue, which tells you something about the priorities of early filmmakers. And we have actually spoken on the show about soundtracks before, but this time there is a twist. While some strong soundtracks accompany excellent films, every now and then you come across one which is punching above its weight, either elevating a good movie to a higher level or making a naff one actually watchable. On this week's episode, we'll look at some of those overachieving soundtracks that exceed the movies to which they are attached. And just to get this out of the way now, we aren't necessarily calling these films bad, although I'd like to think it would be pretty clear when we are.
There was a trend in the 90s and 2000s where every bloody horror movie, especially the slashers, had soundtracks consisting of just a whole bunch of nu metal or rap metal or something else very much a product of the time. And this led to a lot of great soundtracks to bad movies that we could easily pick from. But very few of these actually stand out from the pack in any way, Freddy vs. Jason being the biggest exception. But I'm personally more partial to the older movies, the actual Nightmare on Elm Street or Friday the 13th films before they decided to fight each other. Admittedly, the soundtracks here aren't great, save for a few tracks and obviously the themes. There was, however, a few of those films that had promotional singles released by more well-known bands or artists. Alice Cooper did The Man Behind the Mask for Friday the 13th Part 6, and Dokken did Dream Warriors for the best nightmare film, Part 3, Dream Warriors. Both of these songs are extremely cheesy and take you out of the film to an extent with how 80s they are. But they're also both great, and enough for me to cheat here a little, with our first track. I'm not actually saying that the soundtrack or score for Nightmare 3 is good. I'm just saying that this song is so great that it more than makes up for it.
If there's one director whose films would fit perfectly for this episode topic, I think it has to be Jim Jarmusch. The man just has a knack with getting good music and musicians into his work. Dead Man didn't need a soundtrack from Neil Young, but it got it anyway. Ghost Dog didn't need hip-hop royalty all over the soundtrack to be cool. Coffee and Cigarettes didn't need appearances from Tom Waits, Iggy Pop, Wu-Tang Clan and the White Stripes, but it definitely got them anyway. And Broken Flowers, his lovelorn 2005 road trip film starring Bill Murray, technically didn't need the Burn CD that Murray's character listens to throughout the film, but yet, here we are. That mixtape acts almost like a character within the film, and it runs the gamut from garage rock, indie folk, soul, Ethiopian jazz, and, checks notes, stoner metal. How many soundtracks do you know that feature both Marvin Gaye and Sleep? Not nearly enough, you say? I could not agree more. From that soundtrack, this is Mulatto Estatke with Yegal Tezata. I'm pretty sure I got that. Nailed it.
Going into this episode, I knew I had to include a Zack Snyder film, because not only do I consider him to be one of the greatest film directors today, his soundtracks are almost always way better than they have any right to be. Watchmen, to me, is probably the best film soundtrack, like, ever. Dawn of the Dead was fun. Even the scored films like 300, Legend of the Guardians, and his DC projects have had great scores. The one here that stands out as better than it should be, though, is Sucker Punch, because... man, people really didn't like that movie. I personally loved it, even with its many flaws. But that love comes from two things. It was a damn pretty film, and the soundtrack was so good. pretty much all covers and remixes, with cast members even doing some of the covers themselves. Emily Browning's take on Sweet Dreams is probably still the best version of that song. But the track that I relate most to this film is Björk's Army of Me, or specifically the Sucker Punch remix of Army of Me. The placement of this song in the movie is just so perfect, and now if you'll excuse me, we need to get this wrapped up so I can go watch it again.
So, for the sake of continuity, last week's episode was all about Prince. And it's crazy to think that we went the entire episode, and I don't even think we mentioned his most famous album, Purple Rain. And it's even crazier to think that Purple Rain is actually the soundtrack to a movie. While the movie certainly has its fans, it simply can't compare with how beloved the album behind it is. And it's that sort of disparity between how people perceive film and soundtrack that we're all about in this episode. So to make up for basically avoiding it on the last show, this is I Would Die For You. During the entire Twilight boom, I was working in a shop that sold DVDs and CDs, which means that I had to endure a large amount of its fandom quite against my will. Now, while I have never read any of the books or seen any of the movies and have zero intent of ever doing so, I can confidently say that no series of teen-lit movies have ever put more effort into their soundtracks. By the arrival of the third film, even my cynical self had to admit they were doing some good work. The soundtrack for Eclipse contained new music from Beck, Black Keys, Muse, Florence and the Machine, Sia and CeeLo Green, among others, which you've got to admit is pretty impressive regardless of the movie from whence it came. But the deluxe edition of the CD also had a bonus track which I loved, but has since all but disappeared from the face of the earth, presumably for contractual issues. Right at the end of the track list there was a new song by Battles called The Line. This was the only track the band had recorded with one-time vocalist Teyonda Braxton outside their debut album. And as much as I like what the band has gone on to do since Braxton departed in 2010, I was ecstatic to have just one more track from the lineup that first got me hooked on that mental math rock stuff. But good luck finding it in the year 2022. Thanks, old media. This is Battles, The Line.
Slide projects. these apparitions in the slow.
The track record of adapting video games to film has been sketchy, to say the least. Adapting books, however, has been much more successful, which is why it is probably a good thing that when The Witcher was adapted for TV, it was based off the books rather than the games. There's not enough good I can say about this show. It's extremely heavy, and the first season is a touch disjointed, but so are the books, which I love, so it all works quite well. Henry Cavill is a great Geralt of Rivia, but the real standout of the show is Joey Beatty as Jaskier, or Dandelion if you would prefer. And this is certainly amplified by his performance in musical numbers. It's these that make the soundtrack worth talking about, because it's songs like Season 2's Burn Witcher Burn, and more obviously the fantastic Toss a Coin to Your Witcher from Season 1, that are actually the reason the show became so popular in the first place. Toss a Coin to Your Witcher was covered by just about every YouTube musician out there, and pretty much became a meme on its own, giving the show a much larger audience than it otherwise would have had.
When a humble bard graced a ride along with Geralt of Rivia, along came this song. From when the White Wolf fought a silver-tongued devil, his army of elves at his hooves did they revel. They came after me with masterful deceit, broke down my lute and they kicked in my teeth, while the devil's horns minced our tender meat. And so cried the witcher, he can't be bleed. Toss a coin to your witcher, O valley of plenty, O valley of plenty, oh. Toss a coin to your witcher, O valley of plenty. At the edge of the world, fight the mighty horn that bashes and breaks you and brings you to mourn. He thrust every arrow far back on the shelf, high up on the mountain from whence he came. Ah, he wiped out your past, got kicked in his chest. He's a friend of humanity, so give him the rest. That's my epic tale, our champion prevailed, defeated the villain, now pour him some mail.
This episode was basically an excuse to go back to some movies I'd seen before and really soak in the vibes of the music behind them. And right at the top of that list was Darren Aronofsky's The Fountain from 2006 and its incredible soundtrack. Aronofsky recruited his frequent collaborator Clint Mansell to handle the score, as he had for Requiem for a Dream before it and The Wrestler after it. Mansell is assisted on The Fountain soundtrack by the neoclassical Kronos Quartet and, more interestingly, post-rock pioneers Mogwai. The end result is a flawless combination of classical movie score and volcanic shoegaze intensity. And this is where I actually have to admit that I'm not a big fan of score music generally, but this is an album that I would gladly listen to for just about any occasion. And I have been. It makes everything you do sound more epic. Walking, driving to the supermarket, writing this very script. Turns out that pretty much everything sounds better with Clint Mansell's accompaniment. Even the dishes. And from that score, this is Death is the Road to Awe, which is basically the most death metal, non-death metal song title of all time.
Thank you.
first Crow film has gone down as a cult classic and is well known for having a great soundtrack. While its sequels were either mostly panned or pretty much forgotten about, and here's my hot take moment, or the first one, I think The Crow Salvation, the third film in the series, is the best of the lot. And not only that, its soundtrack is better than that of the original film. Now, I know this is the sort of thing that will get most people to scream at me, and here's another hot take, but Eric Marbius was a better Crow than Brandon Lee. And the best thing, by Filter, is a better song than Burn by The Cure.
Well, the focus of this episode has specifically been on sort of movie and TV show soundtracks. I'd like to take a small detour to talk about games. There have been some games that are so built around their soundtracks that the two are inseparable. Would Grand Theft Auto, Need for Speed, Guitar Hero, or Tony Hawk games be as memorable without a great set of tunes to jam along to? Yeah, probably not. But how about a game that absolutely doesn't need a top-tier soundtrack to work? Like Tetris. Because, in my opinion, the soundtrack for The Tetris Effect, released in 2018, is one of the all-time best video game soundtracks, and I'm not even remotely kidding. The Tetris Effect was a modernization of the classic Tetris formula that also turned the game into an incredible audio-visual experience. Seriously, if you haven't played it before, just do yourself the favor. But no matter how good the game is, and no matter what the developer's intentions were with the specific version of the game, there's no earthly reason to have a Tetris soundtrack go this hard. This next track has nearly derailed me many times for being such a bop. This is Flames.
Anybody?
When it comes to game soundtracks that go hard, the first one to come to mind would have to be 2016's Doom. However, I feel like this has been given enough attention and praise, so instead I'm going for a much more underappreciated pick, with both the game and the soundtrack being largely ignored, and that is Hunt Showdown. It's a horror-esque PvPvE battle royal type game where you, either alone or in teams, have to hunt down one or two big bad monsters, claim the bounty, and escape, all while dealing with minor monsters and other players who either want to indulge in a little bit of the old ultra-violence or claim the bounty for themselves. This soundtrack is provided by a band called the Port Sulphur Band, who, as far as I can tell, have only done music for this game, with an EP and a studio album being credited as the soundtrack. And I'm eternally grateful to this game for introducing me to their music, because they are pretty bloody good. It's their dark and gothic murder-focused style that goes so well with the theme of the game and honestly helps to make the game better than it is. Rise Up Dead Man, the theme, would be a great song to put in here, but that's the one song of theirs that does get any kind of attention. So instead, this is It's Dark in New Orleans.
Say it's done in New Orleans.
And that about does it for tonight's episode. And if you liked what you heard, jump onto whatever your streaming service of choice is and check out some of our old episodes.
And since you're coming back next week, you will be listening to Sam and I both discussing and then trying to describe bizarre album covers. I don't know if we can do it either, but there's one way to find out. Let's tune in next week.
See you then.
Episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.